Holy Batman, everybody. Hello and welcome to the Kathmandu Coast to Coast podcast, of course, brought to you by Kathmandu and Team CP, your endurance coaching specialist. My God, Richard Greer, watching that intro, it feels like it was only days ago we were actually there.
Does get your fist up again, though, doesn't it?
Oh, my God, look at that. What a beautiful day we had for the last Coast to Coast. It was a very, very successful weekend for many reasons, eh?
You're never quite sure what the weather's going to do, are you? And you sort of think about different options and things. But looking back on those videos, absolutely stunning, isn't it?
Man, and how good is it to be here? Season number six, my friend.
Season here we six. Are. We haven't been booted out yet.
Seems odd almost, doesn't it, to be here so early in the season. But, of course, tonight, our first episode one of season number six of the Kathmandu Coast to Coast podcast. We do this every year. The ballot has been won and done. Entries have been out. There's been a second round go out as well. And at about this time, we always like to kick the season off, have an early innings, I suppose, don't we? And get everybody fizzed up for the winter coming.
Yeah, a bit of an intro, because this isn't just a like let's turn up and do situation. There's a few things to get organised here, isn't there? So this is all about making sure people are sorted, giving them a bit of information. And I guess with our podcast, we've done a few of these now, haven't we? And it's a matter of trying to keep it fresh and learning. And we've got a pretty cool show on the cards today to sort of help that learning continue.
We have. We're going to talk about a few things that maybe are going to help you out right now if you've got an entry. We've got a couple of exciting announcements to put out there on the line. We've got a really cool guest who might be part of one of those announcements. Yep. And of course, as always, we'll round this off with race director Glenn Curry, who once again is going to be there to take everybody on the journey from the East Coast. Or we better start at the West Coast, didn't we? The West Coast to the East Coast. We better go the right direction.
Yeah, that's right. And this is a Q&A option as well. So if you're watching it out there, we can see your comments come up. So feel free to throw us a comment as you go, and we'll throw them to either our first guest or Glenn Curry, the race director, as well. So if there's anything that's top of mind you want answered right now, let us have it.
I want to know what the weather's going to be like.
I'll be sunny. Look at the photos you saw just then. No trouble with that.
Well, let's crack on. Let's get into season six. So our first topic really of conversation, mate, is I've got an entry. What do I do now?
It's a good question, isn't it?
Panic?
And I've paid the money as well, so I've committed a little bit on that too, so that's important, isn't it? I guess the first thing is make a bit of a plan of attack. How are you going to actually do it? That's something that we've been doing quite a bit with our coaching over the last wee bit. There's people have got in touch or those that we've worked with in previous years, and how are we actually going to do this thing? So thinking about what potential events might I do, what adventures I might do as well. It doesn't actually have to be all about events. Yeah. It could be some tramping and some sea kayaking, bits and pieces. Winter's a really good time to work on the things you're not quite so good at. So if paddling you've never done before, we want to sort of crack on and do a bit of paddling. We can sort of just put the running and the biking that we love maybe to the side. So think about those things that you need to work on and spend some time in that off season to do that is really important.
Yeah, although it's getting a bit cold to be dipping your toe in the water, isn't it?
Well, it depends how much you fall out, I guess, isn't it? That's right. But to actually just spend a bit of time doing those things, make sure in that overall plan you do factor in things like holidays and busy work periods and things like that as well. So we want to be realistic with sort of how that's going to happen. And probably the other key thing you want to do is try and book some logistics as well. That's quite important.
Well, that's right, because, there's 2,000 people or whatever and supporters and everybody all going to congregate on that West Coast, and we know how fast accommodation sells out over there. So there's a lot of a lot of logistics to go on there. I was thinking, what was I thinking? I had something I was going to ask you.
If you're booking a ferry, if you're coming down, it's probably a good thing to book that. As you say, accommodation's important. Flights and things. We do quite a bit of stuff with our support crew as well. So if you are thinking about sort of getting in touch, we're probably half full already, so do that. But before you book your flights, make sure you get in touch with us first, so then we can sort of give you a bit of more of an idea of when to get here. I think we see it every year is that those that are coming from overseas get here at the last minute, and really it's just a rush fest. Thursday is actually Waitangi Day this time around.
Is it? That works out really good, doesn't it? Really, so nice. If you're in New Zealand, obviously a public holiday. So for those here in New Zealand, that's bloody good timing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But I think we both have headed across to the coast on Wednesday night in the past. So to have Thursday the whole day there before you start racing the 2-day makes a real difference, I think. So that's one tip I'd say that encourage now is actually – yeah, book your travel and book your time off and bits and pieces to get there on the Wednesday. So you can have Thursday kind of getting a little bit sorted, and then you can stand on the start line with a smile on your face rather than rushing.
So will I get paid time and a half as the media team on Thursday?
Well, it depends if you're doing media or not, or depends if you've got other stuff to do.
Listen, I've remembered this old guy's now that he's got his memory back, is remember what he was going to ask you. Actually, I was going to say, is now, winter, leading up, now's a really good time to try and stack up some brownie points with your partner, with your family, all of those things. We know come summer, once we get through here, that the training comes on, the pressure comes on, there's lots of weekends, you want to cram as much in as you can. So the more brownie points you can stack up now and a few of those fun things you can build in, the better off you'll be.
It's interesting. Brownie points don't really like, it's the shelf life is really interesting with brownie points, isn't it? I'm not sure if they last that long. Like, it's quite a long. I think maybe that's the part with the overall plan, is to make sure you sort of factor in a few brownie point gaining opportunities through November, December, and January. So it's not just sort of they finish in September and then there's no brownie points gained.
Yeah. Your supporters, your family, they're just such crucial people in this whole thing. Mm. So
100%.
Yeah. What else we got on the list there, mate?
Well, what are you up to in February?
What am I up to in February?
Angus?
Well, what if we were going to go across from coast to coast, mate?
Well, it's eastbound and down, is it? Is that right?
Eastbound and down is the new is our new theme song, that is for sure.
So get onto Spotify and search eastbound and down.
Jerry Green, eastbound and down.
And I need you to play that while you're doing your training. So, we haven't got time to muck around. We've got to get from West Coast to East Coast as quickly as we can.
We do.
We, Angus.
We do. How are we going to get there, Rich? How is that going
to
happen?
Well, in the past, four or five years, I've done the 2-day as a way to kind of let's get stuck
quite
in.
Quite well, too, successfully.
And mix that up. And I was like, well, across the summer, over the last, this year and last year, it's a balancing act with family and holidays and your camping and all that sort of stuff. So I was like, well, let's just take that down a bit of a notch and maybe do the team. As a bit of a something a little bit different. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
And how many people are you going to have in your team, Richard?
Well, you could have two or three. And I thought, well, three's a good number, isn't it? Because it means that, hey, I can be there, be involved, send it for a bit, and then chill out for a little bit as well and sort of help our whole crew as well. So
you'll need some mates to do this?
And want to be competitive because it's fun to be competitive. So I thought, well, let's sort of have a bit of a think around. I was like, my old mate sitting next to me here, he's been a pretty handy cyclist in the past.
In the past.
Drunk a few beers over the last couple of years. Talked a fair bit.
Apparently I'm on a comeback.
Yeah, so we've got a comeback. So we've got a three-person team lining up with a bit of luck.
I reckon, eh? Mm. So what are you doing, though? You just said that I'm going to do the cycle, obviously.
Yeah, so you're riding
the bike. So I'm going to ride the bike. So I feel like I've got the easy job within reason, but also, and maybe the glory job because I get to finish it, right? But where does Agria fit in this?
Well, I do really enjoy the run side of things, to be honest. So figured that let's go and have a crack at just the run, not have to worry about that, all the admin of the biking and the transitions. Just push go on the run and see what happens.
So we've got a runner.
Yeah, so we've got a runner, a cyclist. So we had to have a bit of a think around. It's like, well, who could we get as a kayaker? So we'll talk about that in a moment, I guess. Should we go through a couple of the other nuts?
We've got two members of our team.
We'll introduce the third member
Sweet.
Soon. Yeah, so I guess other question we had come up that I wanted to talk through was when should I get over the course?
Mm-hmm.
I'd say like if you're local-ish and you can kind of get down and get across the course, it's a really good time to get it down and do it soon because the weather in the South Island in New Zealand is really settled at this time of the year in autumn before the snows and bits and pieces hit. So that would be, I'd say do it as soon as you can. So then you've got an opportunity to simulate what the event is going to be about in the in your own backyard effectively.
I think getting over the course and I suppose the run is probably the main, well, the run and the kayak are going to be the two main things that you really want to see. And I think it's a really, really important thing if you have the opportunity to be able to do it. But you know what I love? I love those that don't get to do it. And I love having that conversation at Klondike or afterwards with those that had no idea what that run was going to be like, you know, and it's massively mind-blowing to them.
That's right. It's the first time. It's just an adventure. So I guess it depends on how you want to take this thing, what your experiences is in the hills and how serious you want to be with it as well.
There's just no substitute for seeing it, living it, breathing it, right?
That's right.
And all those, I'm sure many of our competitors that have come back because they do it the first year, and go, holy Batman, I now understand it because the event takes a little bit of understanding to get it all right and to get the best out of it. So a lot of them do come back. So, you know, and we know that Ben that won the quickest over the
Ben Williams. Yeah.
How many times I heard a rumor. How many times did he run goat pass throughout the summer training?
Well, the summer training, he was it 14, 15, or 16? One of those numbers. So that's quite a lot. He did about the same the summer before as well. So he was up to the point of he knew which, if he put his feet here and here, that would mean he could do this and that on the next one. So he knew it pretty well. But that's, I guess, depending on what your goals are, that's what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, shall we crack on?
You want a guest?
Yeah. Oh, well, let's introduce Ben. Ben Fooey. So 26 years of experience competing in multi-sport Ironman kayaking at a world-class level. So Ben's knowledge underpinned from first-hand experience in the thousands of hours having worked alongside the world's best coaches in sports sciences to guide to reach your best. So he's our kayaker that we're going to talk to in a second. So Ben Fooey is a New Zealand flatwater marathon canoeist who's been competing since the early 2000s, competing in three Summer Olympics. He won the silver medal in the K1 1000 event at Athens, as well as finishing fourth in 2008 Olympics and ninth in 2012 Olympics in the same event. He's also got he's the recipient of the 2003 Helberg Award for the New Zealand Sportsman of the Year and former world record holder in the K1 1000 event as well. So he knows what paddling is all about, and paddling quite fast as well.
Question, Ben, welcome to the show, mate. What are you doing in February?
I was on holiday, actually.
On holiday in February? You're going to be, or you were?
Might be. I might have a bit of a commitment going by the sounds of it.
We need someone to try and anchor the team and sort of carry the rest of their teammates. So I wondered if you might be up for that, Ben.
Yeah, could be interested. Yep. Sounds good.
So you're in pretty elite company here, though, mate. So you may just hearing that little blurb that Rich read out there. You might have to lift your game slightly, but we'll. I think we can get you there.
I'm feeling.
You've given me time. I've got time to train for it. So I'm glad you've given me plenty of heads up so I can get myself in shape. I'm feeling a little bit intimidated, but I think it'll be good fun.
You'll be fine, mate. You'll be fine.
Yeah, good stuff, Ben. How long have you been paddling beginner paddlers in New Zealand for? Like, you've obviously competed at a high level yourself and understood the intricacies of paddling a boat fast, but what about the beginner level coaching? Because you run a kayak school out of Taupo?
Yeah, we teach grade 2 sets out of a central North Island. I've been coaching sort of at this level for about 5 years, but my whole kayaking career started off as in multi-sport, so probably when I was a teenager in the late 90s, I taught people to paddle who were just local and friends. And so I've always sort of got satisfaction from teaching. At school, you teach your juniors, that sort of thing. And so it's done a big circle all the way back. And last 5 years, I've been doing it full time as a job. So
yeah, awesome. What do you enjoy most about the coaching, teaching side of things?
Yeah, I just love the sport. So obviously being out there on the water with people as they sort of having their introduction into the sport is really rewarding, and seeing people overcome, there's quite a few hurdles and challenges along the way and being part of that. And I found kayaking pretty challenging to begin with myself. I started off as a duathlete and got sort of talked into doing a multi-sport race. And so that's how my kayaking started, was through multi-sport. So it just went way further than I ever would have imagined. So it's kind of satisfying to be able to relate and help encourage people to get through those little hurdles and get up and going.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I wasn't aware that you'd sort of started off from a multi-sport perspective and then gone down that track. How old were you when that happened? When you sort of
15. I did my first multi-sport race was the Manawatu Track and Gorge Triathlon. So, I think it had to be 18, one of those situations where your parents had to sign it for you and all that sort of thing. And out of about 33 men and open men, I was 11th into the kayak leg. And by the end, I was pretty much last. And the kayak was nearly as wide as it was long. It was not a great experience. I was a pretty good runner and cyclist. I was all right. And then the kayaking was horrific. But a few weeks later, I sort of licked my wounds and thought, this multi-sport thing is quite addictive, and thought I'd better learn to kayak, and went to the school kayak teacher, and from there it sort of just took off.
How good. That's so good. That's awesome. Talking about your coaching of athletes and things, so, and especially adults, so as adults, we don't learn or put ourselves out there to learn a physical, especially a new skill like kayaking is. Like we grow up running, we grow up cycling, we grow up swimming, all these sorts of things. We grow up kicking a ball and bits and pieces, but we don't generally learn to paddle as youngsters. So, and as adults, it's often difficult. So who are the best kayakers to coach from people that you've worked with over the last number of years that you've been doing this?
I think people with low expectations, it's quite a lot of people doing the coast-to-coast are sort of highly motivated sort of people, and it's a bit self-selecting for high achievers. And most people are pretty good. You get the odd person that comes along that's got very high expectations, and that can really sort of get in the way of a process. And a lot changes in 4 days on your grade two course. You know, the first few days, you feel like, I'm not going to ever be able to do this. And then, you know, by day four, it's come together. So the key is being able to, you know, sort of be philosophical about it, enjoy yourself. Don't worry about falling out. It's all part of it. We've all been there. And the people that do well ultimately are the ones that sort of just stay in the moment, just make the most of everything. Don't get too caught up in the outcome just too soon.
Yeah, nice. So it is that, isn't it? It's just to be a beginner and to throw whatever you've done out in your day job kind of thing out the window, and just be safe in the knowledge that all the people there with you are just trying their best and seeing how they can go as well. I guess that's part of the environment that you try and set up with your group of kayakers as they're coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
Nice. Good stuff. So this episode's all about 2025. We've got a whole bunch of new people that have come on board. They've been looking at coast to coast in the sort of background for a while now. And now they've got this entry and they've got to learn to do some paddling. So what advice would you give new people that are looking to start paddling to therefore complete the coast to coast?
Yeah, start early. Time is your friend. Get in touch with a kayak provider on the website. On the Coast to Coast website, of course, there's a lot of names and people to choose from, and sort of just make inquiries, get in touch with somebody and start getting advice early on. Just bring up, have a conversation. Everybody's situation is different. You know, what gear they might have available or what gear they should look at getting. One of the worst things you can probably do is buy a boat before you've learned a few things. So get in touch with somebody. The advice you might get given will just depends on, do you live close to the ocean? Do you living inland? How big are you or small are you? How much are you looking at paddling, and what's the next 12 months look like for you? All these sort of things would affect the advice that you might get given. And it's probably a big thing. It's just start early, start that whole process.
Yeah, nice. And I guess it's getting on the river is part of that as well. Like obviously figuring out the boat is best once you've sort of done your grade two and sort of you've got a bit of feedback from someone like yourself that knows what they're actually doing. But what about actually getting on the river? It's about building confidence as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it, in some ways it goes without saying, of course, we'd all go, yeah, sure, you've got to get on the river, and you do. The reality is most people don't get on the river as much as they would like, or we would, as instructors or grade two providers, we'd like people to get on the river a lot more than they really do. And so what can you do once you've done your grade two course and you've got the minimum amount of paddling in? It's making the most of, you know, what you do have available. And working on your flat water technique does go a long way. There's many people you see out on the river who set up a good line. Like learning to read the river is not super difficult. There's a pretty clear logic to it. But being able to set your boat up and actually be able to get it to where you want to get it is another whole thing. And by the end of a grade two course, most people's limit is their ability to transfer power and get that boat on that trajectory that they really need it. And so I'd say, you know, before you say, when can I book in for more grade two training? I'm like, I really think you should go away and work on your flat water strength, because at the moment that limiter has been able to get their paddle in the water and get some purchase and not get dominated and pushed around.
So rivers are important to build confidence, but you've got to actually just get paddling your boat on a regular basis is what you're saying, and actually get some good forward paddle technique, so then you can transfer force, you can be more efficient, I guess put your boat where you want to put it, so then you can have a better time in the river and have more of a smile on your face.
Bring stability. The strength and the strength and the stroke bring stability to the whole game too.
Absolutely, right? Yeah, 100%. Yeah, being able to put pressure and commitment and weight on the paddle is really key. And so doing starts and sprints is sort of a bit counterintuitive to people who are training for a 5 to 6 hour kayak race. Best thing they can do probably be, if you know, just do shorter paddles more regularly and do lots of sprints and do lots of short intervals. Mm-hmm. Obviously you don't want to be training anaerobically too often, but I'd if you are going to do some anaerobic work, I'd put that in the kayak and just do the lower aerobic intensity stuff on the bike and on the run, just on the early stages, because paddling hard with intensity will teach you actually how to use your body and recruit sort of a big areas of your body that you actually want to use to be efficient in the endurance sort of side of things. So sprints and those sorts of things will teach you really quickly how to do that.
Yeah, that's great advice, isn't it? Just put that paddle in, spear the fish, and so really rip that blade as much as you can, and then you'll naturally figure out the muscles that you actually need to engage and put the power down.
Yeah, it's a lot harder than it sounds. And I had some the other day. We did some starts, and you know, they just fell straight out. And yeah, starts are quite intimidating. Actually, I was saying to someone the other day, actually, the Olympic champion in the K1 500 in 2008, he fell out in the start gate at a 2 months before the World Cup race. So it's quite easy to knife it and tip yourself out, but it's no harm done. It's not like falling off a bike. So you're just going to empty your boat out and get back in. It's probably better if you don't do it on TV. But you can learn a lot from it, and it'll give you a lot of confidence. So there's things like that you can do that are, these are the sort of ideas that coaches will give you to help you maximize your situation when you don't have access to the river, for those periods of time.
And railing? It would be part of that as well, like actually getting the feel for getting your boat up absolutely. On the side a little bit. Yeah. And that's a good flat water thing that we can play with.
Yeah, definitely all of the time. And, whenever you're turning around and counter steering, which is leaning the boat on its edge. So that's something you can do if you're training on a lake. You can do if you're doing 1,000-meter repeats, maybe you're going 500 meters up and around a buoy and coming back, and you can practice making your turns better every time and getting the boat right on its edge. And a good turn on flat water, you could lose 7 seconds. If you do it poorly, you could lose 20. So there's always things you can build into your training that will get you confident, getting the boat right on its edge, which is critical to paddling confidently down the river.
Yeah, that's awesome. You've had the fastest time on the kayak league in the past. Is that right, Ben? The question is probably how many times.
I've had three of the fastest paddle times, I think, in the times that I've done it in teams.
Have you had the fastest cycle time at all, Angus?
No, but that's irrelevant. Okay, I just know we're back at least one winner.
Okay, yeah, that's right. That's good. And you probably get a trophy for that if you pull that out again, aside from having two old guys slow you down. But I guess the rest of us really want to know is, how do you paddle faster down the Wimac? What are some sort of tips that you'd give those that have done the race a number of times before? How do I get faster?
Yeah, so I guess this advice will be directed at the, as you say, the people who are experienced, who have just got one in the bank and are more competitive. So there's a few different things that I think about. Sort of a model could be supply and demand, which is supply. The supply side of it is what you can deliver. And so that is how much energy you can distribute across that period of time that it's going to take you evenly. So people who are out there listening who have power meters on their bike will be well aware that your perceived effort is not the same as your actual output. Mm-hmm. And so trying to pace yourself, which I always hold a lot back in that first hour and a half, and sort of building up to the midway and then work really hard in that second 2 hours will probably give you a fairly even distribution of effort, which is the most efficient thing. So that's how you'd manage your energy, managing your nutrition. Transferring that power is your technique. So constantly coming back to your technique and just focusing on that, because that'll degrade. That's what makes the coast to coast really tough. It's a really technical event, and it's a tough. People think about the endurance, but mentally you have to really stay on it. And then the demand side of it is the cost of your line choices and all those sorts of things. So you could easily lose 30 seconds every 5K just through not being elegant with how you manage your rails and how you paddle through the wave trains. There's a lot of little finishing touches you can do. So those two things I'm thinking about, how am I managing my energy, transmitting it through my technique, and then just being really aware of my lines and being clean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what you're saying is, it's how do I go faster, but how do I not go so slow? To make sure that I can get down here as fast as I possibly can.
Yeah. I mean, I got the idea, that sort of whole framing of it. I mean, I guess I've always done it. I've been sort of a little bit lucky. I guess had a bit of a gift for it and had good instructors when I was young, like Phil Dooney and those sorts of guys. But as a swimming coach, that sort of put it into a framework that helped me understand. He said, you know, if you want to swim faster, you can have more propulsion, be fitter, or you can reduce drag. You know, without getting fitter, if you just reduce your drag, you're going to swim faster. Mm-hmm. And it was Rick Wells that told me that, you know, as a, you know, a world-class Commonwealth Games champion in triathlon. So, yeah, that was made a lot of sense. And I think it's a way to sort of think about your goal setting. You know, if you want to improve your paddle between now and the, you know, the WOMAC Classic or the Coast next year, you want to try and understand what's going on there. And sort of break it down and set goals within that sort of framework around your skills, around your fitness, and you know, your power, which is force times velocity. So yeah, you get stronger in the winter, get stronger in the gym, you're going to pull harder more efficiently, but then you also need the aerobic base to support that.
You talk about just then in the gym for winter coming along, what are a couple of really good go-to strength or technique skills that we can do on land that we don't have to be on the boat?
Yeah, if you have a gym membership, I think just good old school stuff, real sort of, you know, just bench press, bend over barbell row, you know, providing you don't have any back issues and you've got some good instruction, just to don't do anything dumb. You know, chin-ups, cable rows, all of that sort of real sort of old school stuff. Don't get too fancy because, you know, you're going to get that on the boat. yeah, all that fancy stuff does help, but you can get a massive sort of, you know, 80-20 rule. You can do 20% of a work and get 80% of a gain. Like, you could just go into the gym once a week and lift heavy. Yeah, you know, when I say heavy, I mean the style of lifts are heavy. But, you know, you start off, you know, conservatively. But, you know, bench press, bend over barbell row, deadlifts, chins. And then, obviously, all your core stuff, super important. It kind of goes without saying. And you'll be doing that for your cycling and your mountain running anyhow. So there's a crossover there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's good. Just using those big muscles and get them going so you can put more force down. Can you give me, so you've talked about starts, you've talked about 1K repeats. Is there a key session that you'll look to try and do for yourself as you look to try and build up for race day as a kayaker? This is a key session I'll look to try and do prior to race day?
Yeah. Go and you want to do a long paddle hard. Mm-hmm. That in itself is not going to get you there. You know, there's all the things you do to improve your efficacy along the way, if your technique and training at different intensities and all that. But a session that really has to happen is you need to go and, if you think the race is going to take you 4 hours, you need to go and pedal hard for 4 hours. Because mm-hmm. what you find is, you know, you can cruise for 4 hours and then you go and pedal hard for 4 hours and all of a sudden it's a totally different, anyone that's tried to run a hard marathon will tell you about what that's like. There's a difference between jogging a marathon and running one hard, and same with paddling. So that's a session that has to happen. But ultimately, it's, you know, what you assess your endurance pace. It's not fast, it's just being strong and being able to keep going and keep that fuel going and if your body being happy with that. And if you can do that, that's most of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. No, it's simulate the race. That's brilliant. Do you want to throw that question up? That's quite a good one.
Yeah, Tasha Chambers has just asked, do you assess paddlers' technique and advise them away from grade two camps? Or, you know, you sort of mentioned before about maybe going and doing some other stuff before actually completing that or going on that. How does Ben go about this with his people?
Yeah. So people who come and do our grade two course, they are always welcome to send us a bit of footage. We encourage that. You know, just get somebody just with an iPhone or whatever, just send some footage through if you've done that. People come and see us for coaching. And once we sort of have that relationship, you know, I always encourage those people, you know, we don't charge any extra. Like, I'm really sort of happy to see it when they, you know, I only need to see 15 seconds so I can, well, even if I see 3 seconds, I can just about see a lot. And you've been doing it a while, you don't need a lot of footage, but just enough will tell you a lot. And, so, yeah, people can send that through to me if we already have that sort of relationship established.
Nice. Awesome. No, that's good. Brilliant. Ben, anything else to share to wrap up? Any other questions there, Angus, of your new teammate?
Well, no, I just was actually wondering if he had any questions of us as his teammates.
Yeah,
that's right.
Does he want to be here? That's a good question.
I was like, this is sort of thrown you under the bus here a little bit, haven't we, on live TV, essentially. You've just acquired two...
enthusiastic.
that's a great way of putting it, Richard. That's excellent, excellent. Yeah. Enthusiastic teammates.
Yeah, it'd be nice to take part and not have any pressure on for once. So it'd be all on you guys.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that, pull your weight on the first day. Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. We'll see what we can do.
Yeah, he can't do his bit unless you do your bit. Did you know that?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, that's hey, good. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate your insights. I'm sure a lot of people have got a lot of good information out of that. And, I'm sure we'll be in touch and have some other tips along the way as part of season six as well. So really appreciate it, Ben. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Cheers.
Bye. Cool. Look forward to having you back on here as we go through the series and we chat about how the team's getting on and what we're up to there. We'll need some performance updates, maybe some KPI metrics around where you're at and things and whatnot. But we'll discuss that in the contract afterwards, mate.
Yeah, looking forward to it, guys. Thank you very much. Okay.
Yeah. Mate, cheers, awesome. Ben. Thanks.
Thanks. So you can get in touch with Ben if you just Google Ben Fooey, find out about his kayaking and his grade two kayak school. So obviously great guy, knows his stuff. And really pretty amazing to have someone of that caliber that's willing to put their time and energy into beginners and help them out with their paddling.
Let alone put his time and energy into us, mate. Like, I can't believe you've managed to score Ben as our teammate.
Well, I just talked about how good you were, so I was like, this guy knows what he's on about, so it should be sweet.
Hey, a little bit of admin to clean up before we just carry on. There's a couple of questions that have come in along the way. Fast Eddie, mate, I think we just answered your question. Will Richard be racing seriously? Yes, he is racing seriously.
It's always seriously.
It's always serious, and he's got a job to do. Regan Pierce, Rich, what happened to the salty mullet? Well, I've got a story about Richard's mullet, and it goes something like this, that he obviously clearly, as we know from season five and through the Coast to Coast race over that weekend, he had a dirty old mullet and a beautiful little mo. I was quite proud of you, mo, mate.
I'm my best.
I was proud of Tarsha letting you carry it along. Well,
particularly that fizzed up about it, but however.
And you completed the 2-day Coast to Coast. You won your category. You gave it your all. You got to the finish line. You were there with me right to the end till our last guys came in. Basically, we were there at 11 o'clock at night welcoming people home. You then drove to Kirwee, got home about midnight.
Midnight, yeah.
And for some strange reason, proceeded to give yourself a haircut and shave your mohi off at midnight after that weekend.
Well, the job was is that this thing better be going by the time you finish this race. So everyone else in the house was asleep. So, okay, we'll shave the mohi off. And then got in the shower because it's been a while since I'd showered over the Coast to Coast weekend. And then was like, well, we can't really just have a mullet without the mo. So got out of the shower, I was like, and then started to cut my hair and then couldn't see in the mirror and it was foggy and it was like 12:30 at night. It's like, what am I doing here? This is a disaster. So yeah, and the back of your hair is not that easy to sort of chop, but I think I did okay.
Great work, mate. That's great. So that's what happened to the mullet. Yep. And
stash.
Young Rich is back, right? That's how that goes. Righto, mate. What's a year of training going to look like for us?
Yeah, I mean, we've already talked about it, but haven't we? Like Ben talked about strength in the gym. I think that was really good. Skills and learning those skills early. I think they're probably the two most important things. Strength is important for power transfer, but it's probably the key thing that's going to help you decrease the chance of actually being injured. So become more robust, do some strength stuff, move well. So before you do lots of running and lots of events as a build up, I'd start with those two things. Routine and consistency is also super important. So the family know when on a Wednesday night I'm going to do something. It might have change as you go, but build that routine. And it also means in the mornings you don't have to negotiate with your brain that I need to get up on a Wednesday morning, because that's just what I always do. And to get fit, you've got to be consistent. You've got to do it on a regular basis as well. So it can't be just a great big ride on the weekend and nothing during the week. It's lots of little bits are important. Yeah, sort your gear out. I think that's something just starting to sort of acquire as you need to. You don't need to rush into that, but that's something to work on.
I'm hearing new bike day.
As I look at all the bikes down here, I'm sure there's, yeah, exactly. I'm onto that.
None of those ones.
And probably health is key as well. I think that's also important. And maybe also nutrition is part of that, getting healthy, make sure you're getting that baseline stuff well, going well. So I guess there's a rattle through of a few quick things to be aware of and thinking about at this stage of the season.
Do I need a coach?
I'll probably say yes on that. So if anyone's out there willing to coach this guy
actually,
over here.
Actually, I've got Sam Manson's number here, okay. Mate. He's actually like a coast-to-coast longest day champion, mate. So I'm sure he'll know what he's talking about.
Right. If anyone can whip this guy into shape, we need him right now. So I guess it's accountability, isn't it? That's
correct.
A big part of it, yes. To actually crack the whip. But also give you a pat on the back. When you have done well, when you have been out there giving it heaps as well. So and also that whole overall plan that we talked about earlier too. That's just to have someone else's feedback about, yeah, maybe a bit more or maybe a bit less kind of thing, and someone to bounce some ideas off could be useful.
I think so, right? Like, and I think the accountability is always one of those huge factors in the whole thing, because it's pretty easy to go, I don't actually need a coach. I can just go and ride my bike or do what I do or run
number
or
whatever.
No, yeah, and wing it along and tag along to a few of these and whatnot, and then it's quite easy to get off track a little bit and sort of forget about it all and really, yeah, and that's somebody to talk to, that's somebody to go, hey, like, because you know as one of the great coaches, Richard, that actually you're almost a life advice coach and a few of those other things. Mm. People get down, but they also build a trust with their coach and are able to open up, and you can sort of, you know, help them along the way. So everybody knows I need that.
Yeah, bounce some ideas off. Yeah, I think it's when things aren't going so well, that's when you need a coach to try and get you back on track when you've just been sick. I mean, there's lots of plans out there. We can all follow that. But hey, how do I kind of reintegrate this when life's been too busy or I've been sick, etc.? I think that's where it becomes most important. Nice work.
I'm really looking forward to it. Before we get on, I was just contemplating life as I was looking at Glenn in the background there, and sort of thought that we'd never be on the start line of the coast to coast again. Although actually, I won't be on the start line either. To be fair, I'll be in the middle of it all. But the coast to coast was the first major event. I did a few lead up ones, some of the cool multi-sports, but it was my life-changing event. When I was 30, I was like 120 kilos. I was a smoker. I was all of those things, and I tipped it upside down. And it was actually watching Glenn finish third on the Sumner Beach. We went down there to support him, to watch him finish and things that I think I've told the story 1,000 times, but I remember saying to Dad, I think it was, that as I take this, no disrespect to anybody out there listening, some old people come sort of running up the beach at Sumner, and I sort of went, man, if they can drag their ass across there, like, surely I must be able to do that. And that's what started. Right now, I got a few kilos to lose again. I got a few of those sort of things to get myself back in shape. And actually, the more we've talked about this little project, the more it's sunk in, the more excited I've actually started to get going. Actually, cool. This is something that's going to help me bang myself back into shape.
Get excited about it, eh? Something that you can sort of, you've got a couple of people that you're going to hold the team together. So it's not just you for you, and it's something you've done before. It's a different angle on what you've done before, but it'll be a fun weekend.
Yeah, 100%.
Mm, nice.
What are we doing now?
I think we should talk to Glenn Curry.
He's waiting there for us. He's a good lad. He's a good lad. Welcome back once again, Glenn. Season 6, we were only just talking to you not long ago. Have you caught your breath?
Yeah, it doesn't seem that long ago. Hey, how good to have Ben Fooey on the show. Pretty cool.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, what a great guy. And he knows his stuff just the way he talks and things, isn't he? He's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, he's a legend. New Zealand Halberg winner and obviously Olympian. And, it's pretty cool to have him involved with the coast and, setting people up to do this adventure. So, yeah, there's a fair bit of experience there. So, yeah, a legend in New Zealand sport. Cool.
Yep. Pretty cool to hear that he actually started with a multi-sport sort of background. That's where he sort of first kicked off and found kayaking. It was pretty awesome as well.
Yeah, there's been – yeah, you look at a lot of people that have, probably kicked on their careers from multi – experiencing multi-sport. I mean, Hayden Wild and Andrea Hewitt, I think, sort of, tested out multi-sport for a little bit too, and then they've kicked on and become some of, New Zealand's greatest athletes. So it's inspiring, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. So you, we haven't talked to you not long ago, but you've been a pretty busy lad with lots of entries and trying to sort this whole system with ballots and things like that. There's been a bit of feedback. So I guess there's a few questions that come through just now as well. So I guess keen, first of all, is where's this ballot at? What's a waitlist kind of situation? When are we expecting a bit of an idea about where we're at on the waitlist, et cetera, for those that have put their name down?
Yeah, I'll find the perfect system for this entry thing one day. People always say to me, like, I think in January you must be flat out, and we are busy, but in all honesty, like this past month is just as busy. It doesn't stop the coast for us over this period whilst we sort these entries out, and it's a challenge. And all, yeah, like I've said before, we're just trying to make it as fair as possible. So where we're at is basically, you know, we went out with all our entries in that first option and said, here you go, here's an entry, and you know, please enter within 7 days and confirm your entry, so that we can sort the waitlist out. Well, we didn't actually have, from the people off the ballot, we didn't actually have a large uptake. So we've been out once more with another set of entries to try to fill up that concession number. And we just about got there. And then just today we've actually gone out and offered one more round, which should take us to our concession number. And it's basically based on, I suppose now I look at it, it's very easy to put your name on a ballot, but when it comes to committing, it makes it a little bit more challenging. So we should have our ballot filled, we're hoping, in the next week, and then we will go to the waitlist. On April 10th is our plan to have the waitlist released. So although we did say it would be earlier, we have to fill that concession number. There's no point in doing a waitlist until we've filled the concession number, basically. So we're working through the waitlist, I suppose. It's in the background. When the concession's filled, we will pump out a waitlist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So basically what you're saying is, if you haven't heard, just hope that you're still going to get an entry offered to you in the next little bit, and then we can sort of see where you're at. I think what people are wanting is that even if I'm 100 or I'm 1,000 sort of thing on your list, because you'll have a list there, what is that sort of thing, just to kind of see if they're going to be looking at it as a viable option, or is it going to be sort of way off the cards? But what you're saying is actually we'd like to kind of get it full before we do that. So it's a bit of a tricky one, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's no point in us releasing a wait list that could change in 3 days' time. So, you know, so it's easier that we just get that concession full, and then when we come out of the wait list, we know that's what it is, you know? So, yeah.
Nice. Excellent. I guess what else has been going on? You must have a few things that you want to share in regards to the Coast to Coast community and those that are sort of new to this whole gig, that maybe this is the first podcast they're watching as well.
Yeah, well, welcome to the Kathmandu Coast to Coast. Probably if you are new to it, it's probably something that you've heard of, and that's what we find is a lot of people have heard of this event. And now's probably the time to really start digging deep into exactly what the event is. The event basically first came around in 1983. And it hasn't changed since 1983. And probably if you're new to the event, to understand the type of human being that first did this in 1983, they were sort of like the, names like Graham Dingle, et cetera, who's sort of legends of the New Zealand outdoors. And, you know, he'd be sort of relatable to Sedman Hillary, I suppose. So the people that came and did this event were very much mountaineers, et cetera. And, yeah, something that I'd like to get across is this is a challenging event. It hasn't really been dulled down at all. It's still the same event. You still do the same pass over the Southern Alps, and you still do the same river, grade two river, that they did, you know, over 40 years ago. It is a real challenge. So it is a year round, or even longer, kind of build up to do your first event. And it is something to take quite seriously. And there's a lot to get your head around in terms of logistics. We don't have the ability to sort of run a clover leaf event where there's all one transition and you can go from back to the same point. This is a travelling event. So now's the time to get your head around it, because come January next year, you'll have too much else on your plate. So it's good to start with a real firm understanding about what the event's about. And you will have a really good experience, or probably one of your best ever experiences if you haven't done the event before. To improve that experience, this is trying to create that knowledge now about exactly what you've got yourself into, I suppose.
So we've got a back catalogue of six seasons. That'll sort of start you off and sort you out for a start. But what about skill set in regards to this event? We've talked about that already in regards to kayaking, I guess, specifically with Ben. But have you got any other sort of key things you want to get across there?
Yeah, I suppose, skills is what, you know, that is something that makes this event somewhat different. You know, it is, there is a lot of skills that you do need. And yeah, we start with a road cycle, and it's probably, you know, arguably New Zealand's largest road cycling event. Like, that's what it is. You know, we've sort of got 800 people doing a road cycle. It's one of the largest, doing 55 Ks on their road bikes, which creates really large bunches up to 150 people. This does take a lot of skills to ride in one of these bunch. If you haven't experienced one, you need to go and experience a bunch ride. It's not just a matter of sitting with other people around having a natter. There's a lot to it and a lot to understand. So A lot of the feedback this year was that the bunch riding abilities were, you know, and knowledge was probably, you know, a little bit less than in the past. I don't know about that, but definitely, you know, that's the first skill set you should be thinking about is riding a road cycle with up to 100 other people around you. That is a skill that you do need. And like I said, it's, you know, one of the largest road cycling events in New Zealand. So prep for that. Mountain running. It is a mountain, and every year we get people who turn up and experience this go past for the first time, and the feedback I get is this is not a run. Well, it is a run, but there's some fairly challenging terrain. So, you know, you definitely don't need to come and actually run the course before the event. It definitely helps, but you don't need to come run it. But you do need to have an understanding of the rock running that is involved. It's a pass, and it's a path, but it's definitely not described in any sort of literature in terms of it as being a path, I suppose. It is just a route more than a path. So, you know, you need to understand that. And Ben's, obviously, he's, you know, put plenty of insight into the kayaking. And Richard, you mentioned, you know, and I always say that this is often a new skill that everyone starts with. And it is what makes the event really special for us adults. That often you have to learn that skill and then you have to put it into action. It's just something we do less and less as adults. So, and it makes that finish line that much rewarding when you can actually kayak down that river. And so learning those kayak skills as well. And from my end and the event's end, you know, those kayak skills need to start now. That's when they happen. And you guys have touched on it. And I mean, you don't necessarily have to, you know, go and finish your grade two now, but you should be starting movements to look into that. Winter's perfect time on your weekend to go out for an hour on flat water. And I think Ben summed it up really well. You know, half your skill set will come a lot easier if you're fit in your kayak. So if you can go and paddle around on flat water and get fit and strong, when you go to learn those moving water skills, they will come a heck of a lot easier than if you're trying to get fit in your kayak at the same time as learning them. So, yeah, rip in. Like, now's the time to do it. You've got your entry. Find that kayak. Don't go by the first one you find. Start and something, borrow something, they're everywhere. Borrow something stable and go and develop that strength.
Yeah, that's great advice. And you also, as part of this year, that's a wee bit different. You're going to kind of require that people have actually booked in or they've started that grade two kayak learning stuff. So we don't get that situation in November, someone gets offered a spot, oh, hell, I better learn to kayak. So they've actually had that process and sort of looking to build that the whole year.
Yeah, so waitlist offers will go out. Our first offer will go out on May the 10th. We'll go out with a waitlist offer. From then, the next one's not going to be until October 4th. So when we get to that October 4th one, we need to know that anyone we offer have to prove that they're enrolled in a grade two or have a grade two come October 4th. Mm-hmm. And then our final release will be January 6th for waitlist offers. So, there'll be a... release on May the 10th. If you haven't received an entry on May the 10th, you know, it's up to you then whether if you sort of put the time and commitment over winter into training for the event. Everyone asks me what the waitlist will look like. It changes every year. We don't know. Last year, we went through an entire waitlist and by race day. But we that's crystal ball stuff. We really can't say. Every year seems to be different. And I'd love to be able to work a pattern out, but it just seems to change every year. So, yeah. If you choose to do it, put the effort in and, you know, get that grade two sorted, and it'll definitely boost your chances on getting that late entry, I suppose.
What about handbooks? Whereabouts are they? Are they sort of similar, or have there been some additions? What if we're looking at that? Because that's obviously part of people that are new to this. That'll be one thing that they're looking into.
Geez, I start shaking when I think about going through handbooks, Richard. So that's an August, September job. No, the handbooks. So the handbooks are online. So last year's handbooks are online. They do change slightly each year. But if you are new to the event and you want to find a lot of information, download one of those. It won't change a heck of a lot, and it's all there, you know. And it starts. I think when you start delving into that, you'd start seeing exactly, you know, how much there is to this event. So, yeah, open one up and start reading through. And then start asking you questions once you've read through it.
No, that's good. Perfect. Tasha Chambers also just mentioned here, Glenn, where's my entry?
I'm not sure. It'll be out there somewhere. We're working on it, Tasha.
Okay, right. Thought I'd better throw that in there.
What else is going on? Anything else we need to know right now? Leading into, I guess, a period, we're not going to have another podcast for... A little while now after we've done this initial one. What can we take away now, Glenn, that we just really need, apart from those other things, anything else we need to focus on, getting our ducks in a row?
Yeah, it's obviously financially, it's a big commitment, the coast. And, you know, every year we do get people that don't make it to the finish line, which is a real shame. Funnily enough, this was one, you know, this year was actually one of our highest finishing rates considering the conditions on the river. But it just shows that, you know, people are prepared. So, you know, I mean, you are investing a large amount of money, so you want to make it worthwhile. There's sort of the easy route, you know, there's easy ways to go about it. And there's challenging ways to go about it. Obviously, you know, getting somebody to assist you with a training plan, et cetera, can definitely be beneficial. It just lays things out. It makes it easier on the family if you've got one. And yeah, it just gives you a plan and a build up. For a lot of people, they need to understand the race isn't until next February. You know, you don't have to train like it's in August, and you know, it's a long road from here, and you want to be going into summer enthusiastic about doing some training. You don't want to be going into summer tired from everything you've been doing. So winter's a great time just to plug away, develop those kayak skills, go find a Sunday bunch ride to join and start experiencing that, and just, but don't burn yourself out too early. It is, from this point to race day is a, you know, it's a long way away. And you know, can't always aim to come into spring with some enthusiasm is what I think, you know, with your training. Sounds like you're going to the gym, Angus, from Ben's advice. I sort of saw your eyes roll in the background when he started talking about the gym exercises you had to do. We chuckled myself when I saw your eyes sort of light up.
Leg press.
Leg day.
Yeah, so no, I look forward to hearing about that. So you know, maybe join Angus at the gym because it sounds like he's in there.
Gold. Good job. Gold. Hey, just a quick question. David's asked, and I'll answer one half. You can answer the other half. First of all, he must have a two-day team entry, and he's asking about, does he need to find another teammate that's already registered? No, mate. You can find your teammate. If you hold the entry, you can then find your teammate to be a part of that along the way. But what his real question, I guess, is asking if he's got a two-day team entry, can he trade it in for a two-day individual entry?
Yeah, so generally we are relatively flexible about entry changes. The tandem's the difficult one for us because we have a limitation on kayaks, but we generally are quite flexible. And that goes, you know, a lot of people will enter the longest day, and they'll, you know, that could be their challenge. They might find things that come up over winter that niggle them, and they just, you know, that isn't achievable for them this year. You know, and that's probably something that I want to emphasize as well. You know, like if you have chosen to do that longest day event, really take a good look at the requirements around cutoffs and things, because people do get caught up. It is a real challenge, that event, which makes it special. But you know, just be aware of that. So yeah, we generally are quite flexible in terms of those, you know, in terms of like, you know, those changes. So especially within the 2 day event, the earlier you can do that for us, the better. We'll start ordering bibs and, you know, get those all custom made and the numbers, et cetera. And it just makes our planning a lot easier. But, you know, up to October, you're relatively safe in terms of making those changes within the 2 day competition.
Nice.
Perfect, Glenn. Hey, great advice.
Yeah.
Any other questions now that you're entering?
Yeah, how do I get out of it?
I don't think Glenn's going to allow you to do that.
Yeah. Who knows, Angus? You might. I might have inspired you once. It might be the bloody other foot next year, eh?
Oh, how about that? You heard that here first.
Look out. No, that's awesome. Hey,
oh, you're not talking about you. You're talking about me inspiring somebody else?
No. Yeah.
Maybe.
Let me get clarification on that.
Well done, Glenn. Hey, thank you so much for
your time. And that's been getting me pretty excited, but that seems like a long way away at the moment. Is that an incredible event?
It's a great event. I followed it too. Samara Shepherd, big shout out.
Samara Shepherd was fantastic. Wasn't she good to see a Kiwi on the podium over there? Yeah. So that was amazing.
Was amazing. It was. Hey, mate, thank you very much. As always, your passion and enthusiasm for this event, the Kathmandu Coast to Coast, is appreciated and welcome from every person out there that's ever done it and looking forward to do it. So keep up the good work. You and all of your team, of course. It's not just you. There's a fair team in the background working pretty hard all year round for this, eh?
Yeah, cool. Now, cheers, lads, and we'll catch up in spring, eh, when everyone's had a break.
Good job.
Yeah, awesome.
Well done.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for joining. Yeah. Another question that was in here was, before we wrap all of this up, was from Rachel, and she said, is this recorded? Well, yes, it is recorded. You are watching this live as we speak now, but this is recorded. We'll be on the Team CP YouTube page. We'll be still here on Facebook land to go back and watch, and also, of course, uploads as a podcast, which is where we all started back in six seasons ago as a podcast. Don't go back and we say there's a whole back catalogue, but boy, I went back and listened to one of those once and went, holy Batman, have we come a long way.
We've cut our teeth on this. This is where we've learned. But I do get nervous when people say that they've listened to the whole lot. Yeah. Oh gosh, they know more about me than I do, I reckon.
Yeah.
I just want to reiterate the cycling side of things that Glenn mentioned. Riding in a bunch is not riding with one or two mates and going out and riding on a couple of times. Riding is in a bunch is with 10 plus people, and it's getting an understanding about how to rotate and how to, what about the wind and following wheels and all that sort of stuff, isn't it?
It is. And it's actually, so there's a whole lot to this bunch riding thing. There's, right, like there's the safety in it. So that's what you need to learn, the safety in it. Next to people, like you say, all of that sort of, but also the purpose of it, Richard.
That's right.
Now, I've seen the last few years, been in the media van, going down that first leg. I've gone past all the bunches and I've seen, and the not so bunches. Mm. And I've witnessed what just I really find hard to understand, other than people haven't done any bunch riding. And there's so many people that are staggered out on their own, like either just in front of a bunch or just behind a bunch or whatever. Yep. And understanding the what a bunch can do for you.
The efficiency of it all.
You would not be sitting out in front of it trying to just be off on your own. You'd just sit up, let the bunch come. You'd wipe away, buddy, 100 watts of power that you're using, and you'd be able to eat and do all of those sort of things. So yep, there's the safety, there's all that, but there's understanding the purpose as well.
Mm, that's right. So, and if you're practiced at it, well, then you can do that and be much more relaxed with it as well and enjoy that. That first ride is an awesome ride. So actually be able to soak it in and be part of the event rather than just being nervous as part of it as well.
And the other thing is, once you're really good at it and you know what you actually want and how it works, sometimes you'll end up in a bunch with some less experienced people, and then you can dictate how you want it to play out. That's right. Sometimes you can manipulate people and get them to do how you want it and actually set yourself up for a race.
Yeah. Or just coach and teach others as well. Be the leader. Be confident in what you're doing. I think it's important as well.
Yeah, me, I'm just going to be sitting on the back going, go faster, guys, go faster.
and really just
another couple of K an hour will be good, team. That'll be me.
That's right. Hey, as part of that, this year we've put down a Sunday the 26th of May. So it's after school holidays. For those that want to come along for 3 hours to learn everything, the ins and outs of bunch riding. So that's here in Christchurch. If that's something that you want to do, if you don't have the opportunity to suss out your local bike club, there's lots of different great cycling clubs around. So definitely recommend touching base with them. But if you're one of those people who's like, I don't even know where to start, or I don't have one that's local to me, feel free to come along, jump on our website, and join us, and we can teach you all there is to know about riding in a bunch.
Sunday 26th of May. Sunday 26th of May. Mm-hmm. Also, make sure you're on the Team CP Facebook page, that you like that, and follow that, because no doubt it'll be on there. Mate, also one other thing, Auckland. Are we not having a Tim?
Yes.
Okay. Penny's dropped, the old boy here.
It was right at the top of my notes, so I should have said this right at the start. But if you are in Auckland, Tim Hansen, who's one of our coaches up there, is running a skills clinic where he's going to cover bunch riding. He's going to cover rock running and how to simulate that, and some paddling as well. And how do I train for the coast to coast while living in Auckland? So he's done longer stay. He's done 2 day, etc. So he knows his stuff, knows what he's up to. He's a great coach, and he's running on the 7th of April. So that's not this weekend, but it's next weekend on a Sunday. A bit of a day out thinking and talking and experiencing practical all things coast to coast. You don't need a boat. Bring your bike along and you'll get your feet wet and go and have some fun.
So how do I do that quickly?
Jump on the website, send us a message, etc., and we'll hook you up there.
You get a helicopter ride?
Probably not.
Is that too soon, Tim? I don't know if you're watching or not, Tim, but is that too soon?
Potentially. I think we'll move on from that.
Righto, so that's about it. Is that it?
I think that's it. Hey, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for Glenn and Ben for joining us and giving us some insights. Starting off our season number 6 as we kick off to 2025 Coast to Coast, and getting excited about that.
I'm pretty excited about this season, Rich.
Good job. Well done. We've got a lot to do.
You've done a great job putting this team together, all bar one person, really. But that's okay. We'll see what we can do. Hey, everybody, hopefully you've enjoyed, like you said, episode 1, season 6. Hopefully you've enjoyed this. Hopefully it's brought some sort of new enthusiasm to you, or some new knowledge if you're new to this. We will be back, as Richard said. Give us a month or two. Let's see. It'll be great to see how everybody's getting on. Again, don't forget, follow the Team CP page. There'll be all sorts of other things going on as well if you need to. Don't forget to reach out if you want to reach out. line's always open. Is that right, Rich?
Yeah, just book a call on our website. Just jump onto that, find a time, and we can have a chat. Absolutely.
Or flick the Facebook page a message. Sandra's always on the back end of that and waiting, and we can help you. Thanks, team. Thank you for joining us. Until next time, that's been the Kathmandu Coast to Coast.
Good job. Well done. Thank you.